Welcome here in Las Vegas. It is the Super Sunday Night edition of Heat Wave Sports. I am Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com, sitting in with Chris Wynn tonight. We have a lot to go over. Look, we will get into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Can Edmonton make this a series? Look, I know it's one game, but they look completely and utterly lost out there. I mentioned this on my show. I mentioned this on this show. I mentioned this on my podcast, where there was a large piece of me rooting for the idea that Connor McDavid could get a ring. But the Panthers were just the better team. And the Panthers looked it in game one. We'll see if they could correct it in game two. We'll go over that for sure. We have some baseball. We have baseball overseas. Yeah, we'll talk about that. And we have the best player in baseball on display in the Bronx, like he always is, because Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball. And he has been for Shohei Ohtani's entire career. We'll talk about how Aaron Judge is the unquestioned best player in baseball. We'll get into some baseball talk. We'll get into some interesting teams. I have a little bit of NFL news if we have time. But we got to start with the NBA. The Celtics are just absolutely cutting right through Dallas. If you are a prop player, Luka has not done what you thought he would do. Luka in two games has had the under in points both games. And look, they're going up against the number three defense in the league, in the Celtics. So I know it's all on Luka's shoulders, but dare we say Luka's got to score more than 30? You got to score more than 35. I mean, does Luke have to put up a 40 number for them to win? We'll get into that as well. And I do want to touch on the Caitlin Clark stuff. So before we continue on with the show, let me jump in with Chris Wynn here. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Tommy. Good to join you. Of course, another slam-packed weekend in the world of sports, so we'll get a chance to bounce around here on Heat Wave without question. You hit on a lot of the topics we're going to be jumping into. Of course, Stanley Cup Finals going on as well, too. The Florida Panthers get a win in Game 1, Game 2 tomorrow night down in South Florida as Florida hosts the Edmonton Oilers, as the Edmonton tries to be the first team, right, since 1993 for a Canadian team to win a Stanley Cup. So a good storyline there as well. Too. Of course, you mentioned Stanley Cup Finals in full swing, as well as the NBA Finals. And I'm telling you right now, Tommy, I know this is not kind of, it's not tipping my hat, it's not giving you some love being a Yankees fan, but I think we might have seen a World Series preview this weekend in this matchup between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Yankees. We're going to be diving into that as well, too. So much stuff to talk about on our Sunday night here on Heatwave Sports, Tommy Barton.
Yeah, we really do. And you said it, World Series preview. Here's the scary thing. There's a chance, I'm not saying for sure, but there's a chance that we watched a World Series preview and the starter for game one of the World Series for both the Dodgers and the Yankees are on the injured list. Kershaw against Cole, game one, very likely could be, and neither one of them have thrown a pitch for their first place respective club. So, yeah, that is interesting. But look, we're talking about the NBA, and I want to start off with the NBA because we don't give it a ton of airtime on, you know, this. Look, I went in depth about what I believed with the Celtics. I told you guys I stopped myself short from saying that they were going to sweep, but I thought they were that much better of a team. And I stopped myself short by saying I thought Luka was good enough to steal a game. And when I said this on the air, when I previewed the NBA preview last week, I said on the air, Chris, I said, Luka's going to have to go ridiculous in a game. And I think he goes bonkers in one game. And I said something like 40, 15, and 15. I mean, he's going to have to go nuts. Doesn't it seem like that's the situation? I mean, Luka's sitting here. He's putting up 30 points a night. He's putting up 11 and 11 tonight, and it wasn't particularly close. Look, I know the game was only a 7-point win, but didn't feel like that. Certainly didn't feel like that. To me, Jason Tatum is still yet to have a good game. He's got, 16 and 18 points the first two games. The Celtics have another gear, and they might not need it. Now, I do think that Dallas wins one game in Dallas, but I have Celtics in six. I stopped very, very, very short of me saying Celtics in four, and we might get Celtics in four. I mean, to me, there's no coming back for Dallas. They can't get anything going offensively. And the Celtics just haven't even hit their stride.
Yeah, here's the deal, right, Tommy? You talked about it in the context of it's all on Luka Doncic's shoulders. I got to disagree. I don't think it is on Luka Doncic's shoulders. Look, the guy, and by the way, taking a look at his stat line, obviously, in this game, too, taking a look at my gaming apps like I did pregame and some of the action that I did have on this game, I am kind of kicking myself, Mr. Barton, and not going, you know, I'm going to go a little Sunday night quarterbacking here, not taking a triple-double in this game, as obviously Luka Doncic goes for 32-11-11 in this game. And so there was a guy that got a triple-double. But it's been Kyrie Irving who has not stepped up to the plate in this series so far. I mean, Kyrie was subpar in game one without question. And then tonight, again, subpar game from him, 7 of 18 from the field, doesn't make a shot from three. Yeah, he had 16 points and 6 assists, but that's not Kyrie Irving that they're going to need to win a championship. So, well, look, we understand that it is a supporting cast around the likes of Luka and Kyrie on this team. We get it, okay? You're not going to get monstrous contributions from Kleber and Lively and you know, Derek Jones Jr. and even P.J. Washington, although Washington had a decent game tonight. But it's going to absolutely be on the shoulders of their two guards on this team. And the Boston Celtics have a 2-0 lead in this series, Tom Barton. Let me tell you something. The Celtics haven't even had Jason Tatum playing well at all. I mean, his shooting percentage has been bad for the first two games of the series, and they still have a 2-0 lead against Dallas in this series. So, obviously, Drew Holiday stepped up big tonight, has a solid game for them with the 26-11. And Jaylen Brown was Jaylen Brown-esque. He was 1-for-5 from three, but still puts up 21-7-4. In this game, I kind of want to bounce something off you real quick, Tommy, because I heard some chatter right here on the Fox Sports Radio national feed as well as the last couple of days referring to this series and talking about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I'll ask you straight up because I have my take on this. There have been some people that have been saying that Jaylen Brown is a better basketball player than Jason Tatum. I find that to be a preposterous and kind of ridiculous take, and I'll tell you why. But I want to first get your take. Who's better, Mr. Barton? Is it going to be, are you going to go roll with Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum when it comes to who's the better basketball player?
Yeah, it is a ridiculous take. I mean, it's clearly Tatum.
Yes.
To me, you know, what Tatum provides, or the threat that Tatum even is, with clearing out, how he handles the basketball, how he gets out in space, the things that Jason Tatum does allows Brown to do what he does. It doesn't mean that Brown can't be a great player. Look, we're talking about the NBA playoffs. Well, let's shoot it over to the NHL playoffs just for a comparison's sake. Nobody is saying that Leon Draisaitl is a better player than Connor McDavid.
Right.
Now, he might have games where he's better. He might have series where he's better. Heck, yeah, he might have stretches where he looks better. He's not a better player. A lot of what he does is based off of what McDavid does. And I think that that's how you have to look at this. I don't want to make Jason Tatum out to be more than he is, but there is always that aspect, right? In every sport, the guy that makes the guy, and then he looks really good, and then it starts to get, oh, wait a minute, is it overshadowed? You see it happen all the time. The guy batting behind the cleanup guy, or the guy batting cleanup for the number three hitter, you know, the quarterback throwing it to the wide receiver, who's really making it? It happens a lot, but let's not forget who's the better player. And it's clearly Jason Tatum. He is the better player than Jaylen Brown. He is a better talented athlete. He is more athletic. He's a better basketball player. Doesn't mean he's going to put up better stats. And there is a huge difference there. Now, I do want to go back and clear up something here, Chris.
Yeah.
When I said it has to be on Luka's shoulders and he's got to do more, this is not saying he's not having a good year. Understand, yes, I get it. It's Kyrie. But I thought Kyrie would struggle. I thought the entire offense, when I went over my preview, I said, I can see the Celtics going into approach with saying, okay, Kyrie and Luka, we're going to let you guys score 50 to 55 to even 60 points a night, but we're going to shut everybody else down and they're not even going to score 40. And that was kind of the approach that I thought that they would take when I watched a lot of their practices and I heard what the coach was saying. They didn't care about that. So my point with the Luka thing, just to clear it up for everybody out there, wasn't that he's not playing well, that he has to do more. No, the only way I think Dallas wins, because of how Kyrie's playing, because of the defense of the Celtics, the only way I think that they win is if Luka goes absolutely nuts and scores 40, 45 points. That's the only way I think they win, because of the Celtics defense on everyone else and the struggles of Kyrie.
Okay, point taken. And look, I'll add on to your take regarding Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and I'll give you my little twist to it here. So when I think of this discussion, all right, Jason Tatum is a guy who's going to be an MVP caliber type of player year in and year out, all right? He's still relatively young in his career. When we're talking about guys who are top five, top six, top seven guys in the NBA, we're talking about guys like Jason Tatum. That's the kind of player he is. That's not what Jaylen Brown is, all right? So to the couple of national figures, which is the reason why I brought this up, and I'm not going to try to harp on it. I'm just basically going to, you know, give my point on it. That said, oh, we actually think that, you know, Jaylen Brown's actually a better player than Jason Tatum is. I think it's ridiculous. So, yes, when you're talking about Jason Tatum, he's got MVP caliber type talent. Jaylen Brown is not going to be winning an NBA MVP. He's not really one of those guys you talk about that's a top 5 to 7 player in the league. So I think that's a distinction to make. This is going to sound kind of homerish as I wrap this up real quick, and I'm not doing this. I think it's a legitimate comparison. The comparison of Jaylen Brown along with Jason Tatum is very similar to the comparison of Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas in Detroit back in the 1990s and late 80s. All right, Joe Dumars, Hall of Fame player, excellent basketball player, solid. But you're not going to compare him to Isaiah Thomas and say he's better than Isaiah Thomas. To me, this is exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. Jason Tatum is in a stratosphere. All right, and yes, I heard what you said, and I agree with let's not make Jason Tatum out to be Michael Jordan. I'm not trying to say that, but when you talk about what the dynamic of each player brings to the basketball court, there's no question to me that Jason Tatum is the guy over Jaylen Brown. Now, going back to the Dallas Mavericks, look, the NBA, what do we talk about all the time, Tommy? It's all about matchups, right? How these teams match up against each other, and you know, it has nothing to do really with Luka Doncic and what kind of year he's had. It's about the matchups on the court between these two teams and how juxtaposed against each other they're going to be able to do. Through the first two games, look, the home team won both games. The Celtics looked pretty solid, except for Jason Tatum, all right? And except for a couple other players as well, too. Al Horford has not yet shown up in the series. The point being, though, is that Boston's been able to win both games at home. The series isn't over, but you do kind of get an indication of what we're going to be seeing in this series with respect to matchups between these two teams moving forward, regardless of this game is played up in eastern Massachusetts or in central Texas. It doesn't matter, you know. So, you know, you're going to have the home court advantage, obviously, for the Mavericks, and that's going to turn the tide a little bit there. And you're going to have an idea in the head of the Mavericks that we're going back home. Yes, we took it on the chin in games 1 and 2, but we still have expectations about what we can do in game 3 in front of our home crowd in that revved-up Maverick fan arena. So we'll kind of see how that all shakes out. But from a matchup standpoint, it looks like it's going to be tough sledding, to say the least, for all things Dallas against this Boston team, Tommy.
Yeah, I really do think it is. Chris, I don't want to jump off the Jason Tatum thing.
Okay.
And I'm not ripping on the host because I don't know who they were. I didn't hear it. But here's one of the things that I always sort of have said over my nearly 30-year career at this point. Ooh, that hurts to say. But yeah. You know, I've always said, you know.
Well, it hurts to hear, though, right? It hurts more to have it hit your eardrums than it is for them to say it.
But, you know, I always say, I say this for sports all the time, but it can work for anything in life, for politics, for anything, is look at the other side, right? And we talk about this. There was always the debate between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. That was a longstanding debate. And I used to say, you know, Ron was a big Aaron Rodgers fan. I used to say to Ron all the time, all you have to ask yourself is, would Aaron Rodgers trade his career for Tom Brady's? And would Tom Brady trade his career for Aaron Rodgers? And the answer is Tom Brady would never trade his career for Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers would trade his career for Brady's in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can do that. You can do the other side. When a trade happens in sports, I always say, don't look at the team that's making the trade or the team that's trading a player away. Look at the other team, the team that's chasing, the rival. When the Red Sox make a trade, I look at it from the Yankee perspective and I go, oh man, oh, that one hurts. Or, oh, okay, that's good. Look at it from that perspective. And here we go, going down a long-winded way to say, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, go ask 29 other GMs in the league. You get one pick. You get one Celtic to have on your team. Are you taking Tatum or Brown? Every single one of them are taking Jason Tatum. Every one of them.
No question about it. Yep.
You know, that ends the debate right there. You can say that with a lot of sports commentary out there. You could say that with a lot of things in sports when you're comparing this person to this person and this to this. Just say, look at it from the other side. If this was an open forum, an open draft, Jason Tatum is going in the top five. Jaylen Brown's not going in the top 25, probably. You know, so it's not particularly close. He's having a good series. I like what he's doing in the postseason. This is great. But let's calm down with that.
And Tommy, jumping over to some numbers when it comes to the Dallas Mavericks on this side of the series. Any team, Mr. Barton, with Kyrie Irving on it playing against the Boston Celtics, it's not a good thing, my friend. Kyrie Irving, 0-7 in Boston against the Celtics. Overall, 0-12 against the Boston Celtics with a team that has Kyrie Irving on the court. I believe it's in playoff action. So that's another stat, although it can be looked at like a fun fact, I guess, is not something that lends well if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan in this NBA final series, Tommy.
You know, here's the thing, though. Again, I'm going back to what I told the listeners. So this is not, you know, something after two games you could go back and say, hey, oh, wait a minute, Tom's changing his tune. I didn't expect much out of Kyrie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why Dallas or Dallas fans did. I didn't expect much out of Kyrie. Look, Kyrie on the year was a top 15 scorer. He did a lot of that damage. I don't want to say garbage time, but he did a lot of that damage in against weak teams, weak defenses. He's not what he once was. And I thought to myself that, and I spoke it out loud, if you wanted to say Luka was the best player in the series, which is very possible, I put Kyrie after the next three. You know, I thought White, Brown, and of course Tatum were all better. So it wasn't a 1-2. This was billed as a 1-2 against 1-2. Brown and Tatum against Luka and Irving.
Yep.
That's an unfair comparison. Irving's defense isn't anywhere where it wants. So as an outsider scoring, he doesn't really do much. Now he's not even scoring. Hey, he's going up against the number three defense in the league. You can see what Boston's game plan has been. Let Luka do what Luka does, because we're not really going to stop Luka. And then you turn around and you go, okay, if we can't stop Luka, let's stop Kyrie. And then the rest of the team will fall by the wayside. The rest of the team, there's not a guy on that team that averages more than 10 points per game. You know, I mean, just there's nobody there. You go down the Boston roster, you go to the fifth guy, Al Horford's averaging nearly 10 points a game. It's just an unfair comparison. This is why I stopped myself short of saying sweep, but I wanted to say sweep. I think Boston has this series completely in control. When they go back to Dallas, I do believe there's going to be one game where Luka goes nuts. Absolutely crazy. Probably steals a game. And if you're the Dallas side of things, aren't you looking at this and saying, okay, guys, look, we got completely just blasted. We were down by 30 in game one, but we came back. We showed a little fight. We came back for a period of time there. Game two, you know what? We only lost by 7. We played a terrible game. Kyrie did terrible. It was on the road against a good defense. We still haven't played our game, a top 10 offense. We still haven't played our game, but we only lost by 7. There's encouragement to be had by Dallas, but I'm finding it very hard to believe that Dallas comes back in the series.
Oh, make no mistake about it, though, Tommy. There'll be a glass half full approach and perspective when it comes to all things Dallas Mavericks going into game three. But, you know, bouncing over to that Boston Celtics team, you mentioned a lot of players on that team. One guy you did not mention who could absolutely positively be an X factor in the series, and there was question marks with him going into the NBA Finals. Of course, I'm talking about number 8, the second best number 8 after Antoine Walker in Boston to wear that number was Kristaps Porzingis. He comes in and, you know, he's playing like his hair's on fire, just playing nuts, right, for that first quarter in game one. He was, and at first half, he was unbelievable. You know, had more of a measured game here in game two. He ends up, playing 23 minutes and getting in double digits and getting a handful of rebounds. But it almost looks like that dynamic that you pointed out, right? That Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown against Kyrie, and that two on two dynamic. When you've got a guy in Boston that can absolutely kind of throw a monkey wrench into that entire situation. And Kristaps Porzingis, it makes it even more tough for the likes of the Dallas Mavericks to get things done as we move forward in this series.
Chris, let's look at this from a betting perspective. The early lines are out for Wednesday's game.
Yep.
Dallas minus 1.5. I'm speechless. You know, before the series began, I said Dallas should not be favored in any game at all. Before the series began, when you looked at the look-ahead lines, Dallas was going to be favored 0 games. What have we seen in the first 2 games to make Dallas a favorite?
I'll give you the reason. I'll give it to you. Tommy, I will give you the reason. And you just kind of waxed a little bit poetic on it about 2 minutes ago. You talked about how the Mavericks are going to look at this, right, saying, you know, we didn't completely, you know what, the bed in game two. We went out there. It was a back-and-forth type of basketball game in this matchup throughout most of it until you got to the fourth quarter where the Celtics were able to get out to double-digit leads in the fourth quarter. But it was really much a back-and-forth affair, and the Mavericks, make no mistake about it, felt like they were in the basketball game, and therefore, hey, this is a brand-new series kind of mentality from the Dallas Mavericks. Tommy, let me tell you something. This is the NBA, okay, and this is the finals. I can absolutely understand the rationale why the Mavericks would be favored, because they're going back home. This is a team that's made an improbable run to the NBA Finals. Before they played these 2 games against the Celtics, you know, what are we talking about in the Western Conference? We're talking about how the Mavericks have been, you know, astoundingly good and their route to get to the finals, you know, in their route to get to the finals. All right. And so that is the mentality. That's the reason why. All right, I'm just giving the rationale as to why they would be favored in a game three. Now, am I going to sit here and be disingenuous with you and say, oh, yeah, I think that they're definitely going to win game three? No. I think the Boston Celtics, you know, if this is Chris Wynn's gaming / NBA analysis opinion, I think the Boston Celtics win game three. And then I think maybe the Mavericks have a chance to win a game four to avoid the sweep. And then the Celtics come home and win the series. But, you know, I just straight up talking about that line, you know, are you really that surprised, Tommy, that the Mavericks would be favored given kind of the makeup and landscape of this early series?
Yeah. I am. I'm very surprised because I think the betting public is going to run to the window to take the Celtics. And I think we're
going to get
lopsided money.
They might be right. They might be right. You know what I mean? This might be one of those situations. But Tommy, how many times have you, myself, Tim, Angel, everybody in this town that knows anything about anything when it comes to gambling, have seen these situations present themselves, man, in the NFL, in Major League Baseball, where, oh my gosh, like, how could this line be? I can't believe this. And I go to the sports book and I take out my C note, Mr. Barton, and I say, I'm betting the Celtics all day long, and I'm not even sweating right now. I'm perfectly fine. And then what happens? The Mavericks win by 10, 12 points, and I end up a little less lighter in my wallet than I was before. You know what I'm talking about, right, Tommy? You know exactly where I'm going here.
I'm not saying Dallas can't even win. I had them winning game three. Mm-hmm. I'm just shocked that the sports books are putting that number out there. Because here's my thing, okay?
Yeah.
You're giving the Celtics plus 1.5. You're going to get a crazy amount of people in the Celtics. If you put the Celtics minus 3, you're still going to get a lot of Celtics action. You know, that's my point. To get two-way action, I'm shocked that the Celtics are underdogs. And maybe that'll switch by the time game time comes around. And this will go off at like a pick'em, which is kind of what I'm expecting. I'm just shocked at the initial line. That's not to say that I don't think Dallas can't win game three, because I do. I do think they can. And I had them winning game three. I had, you know, Celtics winning the first two, then winning game three, Celtics getting mad winning game, you know, four, potentially 4 and 5, if not 5 and 6. You know, this series was over before it started for me, and nothing has changed in my opinion. Can Dallas win a game three? Sure, they can. I'm just shocked that the line came out at this, because I think you're getting as much Celtics action plus 1.5 as you are minus 1.5.
And I think you're probably right when it comes to that line getting some movement, because there's going to be, what, 2 weeks between all of these basketball games in the NBA Finals, Tommy? I mean, come on. Why are we waiting until Wednesday to play, you know, game three? You know, it took us 3 days to play game two. I mean, come on. So, but I think you're absolutely right. No question about it. that there's going to be people that hit the window and are putting down ducats on the Boston Celtics, and in quick form, we're going to see the books end up moving that line towards the Celtics.
Chris, I want to touch on a little bit more basketball before we move on to hockey next segment here, before we take a break.
Yep.
Caitlin Clark left off the Olympic team. I think it's one of the dumber things that I've ever seen a league do. They've handled Caitlin Clark just with pure stupidity from top to bottom. Me and Tim mentioned it last week. The outward racism is just evident. The outward prejudice against her, what they I'm not talking about color of her skin, just the way that they're treating her is just unfair. Not feeding the golden goose, so to speak, doesn't make any sense. And now, you know, you look at this and they leave her off the Olympic team. Why? I mean, what is the point? Look, I read a tweet, and I wish I could remember who said it, so I'm sorry if you guys are listening. I read a tweet and somebody said, well, at least now I don't have to waste my time and watch Olympic women's basketball, because I would have got to watch if Caitlin Clark was there. And that's truly how I feel. I won't watch, which I don't normally ever watch, but if Caitlin Clark was there, I was watching. It lost viewers. They lost fans. And by the way, they're a worse team without her, because she is a talented, really good player. So this doesn't make any sense to me, Chris. Is it really just kind of the world against what Caitlin Clark is doing?
No, and here's my thing on this, all right? There's a couple of questions here. Is a couple of observations and ways to kind of look at this. You can look at it from the perspective of, are you trying to grow the game of women's basketball, right, or women's sports in general? Or are you just going to the Olympics because you're trying to win medals, and in, you know, the case of the women's basketball team, gold medals, because that's all they do. They win every single one. And so if you're looking at it from that standpoint, that to me is the reasoning why Caitlin Clark is not on this team. You can absolutely look at the team and at the roster and all the players on that roster and make the case that they're all better than Caitlin Clark right now as basketball players. Let me finish. So absolutely you can. Absolutely. Positively. 100%. All these women, the women that every single person on this team is more accomplished as a basketball player than Caitlin Clark is right now. And Caitlin Clark is playing.
21-year-old Diana Taurasi is not better.
Yeah. Right, okay. So I didn't say better. I'm talking about accomplished and maybe that, look, this is the same situation. This, again, we're getting
Chelsea
into the
Gray
same.
Hasn't played a game
no,
in 8 months.
Tommy, this is the same situation that happened in 1992, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay, 1992, right? Actually, it's not really the same situation, because that situation, a player that was actually better was left off the team that was actually a better player than one of the point guards. Okay, so, but I'm kind of making the comparison as far as the viewpoint of all the people that are, up in arms and all butt hurt because Caitlin Clark's not on the Olympic team. If you look at every single player on this team, they absolutely positively are more accomplished, okay, as basketball players than Caitlin Clark. Obviously, she's a rookie, all right? She just came into the league. Her team's not very good. She's been solid as a player, and, you know, I think she's going to be a very good WNBA player, but the jury's still out as far as how good she'll be as a professional women's basketball player, not a college player. She's great. She was unbelievable as a college player. But the jury is still out as far as her. So, yes, I stand by what I'm saying. Every single player on that team is more accomplished as a player than Caitlin Clark is. Now, the argument here isn't just about that, though. It's about, you know, people out there, it's almost like they get offended if you don't, you use the term golden goose, which is exactly what she is when it comes to the WNBA. And when it comes to women's sports, she is a golden goose. That's how she's viewed, and I think that's the right perception. But when it comes to, you know, looking at her, stacking her up against her fellow players in the WNBA, she's not the greatest player in the WNBA yet. She's not even one of the best guards in the WNBA yet. She's probably in the top five, but she's not like top two or three. Okay, so that being said, there's also this question out there about, you know, what are we trying to do when you go to the Olympics? All they care about is winning gold medals. That's it.
No, they don't.
That's all that matters. No, let me finish. Because you're going to get into this whole thing about growing the game of women's basketball. It's not about that. They don't care. Team USA does not care about growing women's basketball. That's not in their mindset when they go to the Olympics. They're about winning gold medals. So, by the way, you talked about it like it was the league. By the way, it's not the league deciding to keep Caitlin Clark off the team. It's not an individual team or an individual coach. I believe it's the committee and the coaching staff, right, that actually makes the decision. Who makes the decision when it comes to Team USA's roster and who's selected? It's the committee, right? And the coaches? That's who decides, right? So it's not the league. Right, it's the committee and it's the coaches. So, they had their reasoning why they're keeping her off. What do you mean both ways?
Listen, Chris, it's not both ways.
I'm explaining why she's not on the team. She's not on the team, man. She's not on the team, brother. No, so
she's not on the team. You're telling me two things.
Yes,
and you can't have it both ways. You're saying everyone is more accomplished than her, and then in the next sentence you say, all they want to do is win Olympic gold medals, right? You can't take somebody because of their accomplishments. You take the best player to give you a chance to win. Caitlin Clark, right now, at this point in her career, is better than Diana Taurasi. At this point in her career, okay? Caitlin Clark, at this point in her career, is better than Brittany Grenier. At this point in her career. At this point in her career, Caitlin Clark is better than Chelsea Gray, who hasn't suited up for 8 months. Okay. Now, I know she's amazing. I get it. She is amazing. But she hasn't suited up in 8 months. There are not small quibbles here.
You're comparing forwards to guards, though, Tommy. You're comparing forwards to guards. They're not replacing a forward with a guard. You only have a certain amount of guard slots, right? You only have a certain amount of forward spots, and that's how it works out. That's why the whole thing happened in 1992. With Isaiah Thomas and John Stockton, right? Because you only have a certain number of guard spots. So that's why.
No. You're talking about guards. Who's a better player right now, Diana Taurasi or Caitlin Clark? Right now, today.
Right now, definitely Caitlin Clark. I would say Caitlin Clark. Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Done. There you go. Okay. Done. If you want to win, your argument was they want to win. They are not putting the best team to win. They're giving Diana Taurasi because it'll be her, sixth? Appearance. She has plenty of success. She has accomplishments. I agree with all that. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not even upset about her being on the team. My point is, if you're telling me they're putting the best team to win, that Caitlin Clark's on this team over Diana Taurasi. If you're saying that they're doing this for, because Diana Taurasi is going to be there for the sixth time and it's almost, a credit to her, then you put Caitlin Clark on. You put Caitlin Clark on this team if you want to win a gold medal. You put Caitlin Clark on this team if you want eyes on the sport. So you cannot have it both ways.
No, I didn't. I just told you, that eyes on the sport doesn't matter. They don't care about that. They don't care. They don't care about eyes on the sport. It's the Olympics. And whoever you talked about that. Wait, time out. You made the comment about the caller, right? Or somebody, or was it a host or a caller? Somebody said something about how, now I'm not going to watch women's Olympic basketball again. I mean, why not? If you're going to watch it in the first place, you're going to watch it anyway. By the way, I'm going to move the goalpost a little bit here because I made the comment about, you made the comment, the definitive comment of, if you want to win gold medals, you put Caitlin Clark on the. Let me tell you something. They're going to win the gold medal anyway. Okay. It doesn't matter if she's on the team or not. So I'm a little bit moving the goalpost there, but not really, because what I'm saying is true. They're going to win anyway without her on the team. And by the way, we're not taking into consideration other aspects. Like Caitlin Clark has played freaking 75 games in the last 10 months. She just came off a college season. Now she's going into a WNBA season. So maybe this is in her best interest personally that she's not on the team. And that's a point that's been brought up by many people across the board, across the media spectrum, when it comes to not having her on the team, maybe is a benefit to her in the long run. And, this whole idea that, you don't have to have her on every team right away. Yes, Tommy, I would agree with your take that she's better than Diana Taurasi right now. Okay, so, if that's the one reason why she's on the team, okay, I guess. But I'm telling you right now, the viewpoint of whoever made the decision, again, I keep bringing this up, whether it's committee or it's coaches or whoever it is that are picking the team, the idea that they have a better chance to win a gold medal with Caitlin Clark than Diana Taurasi, I guess, but they're going to win anyway. So that's not, you know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, they're clearly the best team. They won every gold medal since we can remember. So it's kind of a moot point to me that's like the point of discussion when it comes to her being on the team. But I guess I'll round it out by saying this. I think there's many reasons why I think it's okay that she's not on the team, right? I get when some people are like, oh, I don't think people should be up in arms though that she wasn't chosen to be one of the players on this team. When again, like I'll go back to what I said at the top of this take, I think you can absolutely make the case that, you know, okay, every other player on this team, maybe except for Diana Taurasi because she's old, you know what I mean? Although I did go out and see her last week put up a 30 spot against the best team in the WNBA, at the age of 40. So there's that. But, like, yeah, you can absolutely – I mean, you look at the roster, Tommy. Just look at the roster, and I can absolutely – I guess the word I'll use is rationalize why those people are on the team instead of Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark is better than just about everybody on the team. She should be there. They will win a gold medal without her.
Yeah.
She's left off because of horrific jealousy garbage again. Cheryl Reeves publicly critiqued her, and that has to bring up questions. The fact that she's better. And I'll tell you what, Las Vegas Aces fans, here's the reality. She's probably better than Kelsey Plum also, although that's kind of close. But she's probably better. Caitlin Clark not being on the team is not because she can't give them a gold medal, is not because she doesn't deserve to be on there. It's because everybody in the WNBA is pushing her down. It's just that simple, Chris. Look, let's take a quick timeout. Let's come on back. Let's talk about the NHL. I got to see how you feel about this because I'm torn. I am torn with the NHL. I was torn going in. I didn't make a bet on the series, even though I probably should have. I didn't make a bet on series in game one, although I probably should have. And I'm staring at game two in the same kind of conundrum. And I want to get your take on Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl against the team that is the Florida Panthers. All that and more right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
Guys, we are back here, Heatwave Sports. Talking a little NHL playoffs now. We're going to move over from the NBA. Again, we'll take all your calls, 876-1340. And hit us up over on Twitter. It's at Tom Barton Sports. Over on the X, it's at Tom Barton Sports. And at Christian Wynn as well. So, guys, look, I told you guys when the playoffs began that I was sort of pulling for Connor McDavid. I live in a Florida Panthers household. My wife used to work at the stadium. She loves the Panthers. I just have that McDavid thing. I've always liked him. I've always liked, what the best can offer. And I like the best elevating to that point. I think it would be good for the sport. I think it would be very good just for sports in general. I like that aspect. But I continue to keep saying, as I watch the Rangers against the Panthers, the Panthers were just the clear best team in the league over and over. They proved it, and they proved it, and they proved it. And when I gave my preview, I said, you know, other than McDavid and Draisaitl standing on their heads, I can't see them winning this series. And it sort of reminded me a little bit about Luka against the Celtics. Well, game one proved to be exactly that. Game one, the Panthers were everything that I thought that they would be. I didn't take advantage of it because I am still sort of torn here where – it's hard to fathom that McDavid and Draisaitl can be shut down so easily. And it did seem easily. So now we're going into game two. And I'm still in that same position where I think that Florida is the better team. I know that Florida has the better goalie. I think Florida has the better defense. They are, the team against just the superstars. And I can't wrap my head around, what am I expecting to happen tomorrow? What am I expecting to happen for the rest of the series? Yeah, I think Florida wins. Oh, but you go out there, you go bet Florida, and, you know, McDavid scores two goals, Draisaitl adds a goal, and all of a sudden you go, oh, man, how could I bet against these guys in a tough, tough, tough series? You're going to be kicking yourself. It is a really tough series. I think the NHL is getting a good series, but I can't really put my finger on where the pendulum is swinging here. I still think Florida's the better team, but I have a hard time believing that McDavid and Draisaitl are not going to at least put some fight in and at least make this some sort of series. Chris, where are you with this?
Yeah, Tommy, well, you mentioned it, and you talk about, if not the best team in the NHL, one of the best teams in the NHL, obviously, is the Florida Panthers in the last couple of seasons. And what can add to your team that is one of the best, if not the best, in the league? It can be a great goaltender, right, Tom Barton? And that's exactly the situation with the Florida Panthers. Look, we understand that they do have pieces offensively and defensively that are formidable and are a reason why you're talking about them at the top of all things NHL. But Sergei Bobrovsky was absolutely sensational in Game 1. He turned away every one of the 32 shots that he faced. He had a turnover in the first shift of the game, basically, was able to recover. And you talked about, you know, the formidable people that he's facing with this Edmonton Oilers team. You're talking about a couple of probably the 5-6 best players in the NHL in Leon Draisaitl and, of course, Connor McDavid. And this was a Oilers team, Tommy. They didn't play bad. And they certainly haven't played bad getting themselves to the Stanley Cup Finals. This is a team that, despite the fact they weren't able to score 32 shots, I mean, they have been unbelievable when it comes to the penalty kill for the Oilers. They've been extremely efficient offensively leading up to this series. And the Florida Panthers just kind of flipped that all on its head. Obviously, Bobrovsky was unbelievable. And we all know, you know, if you follow the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs, hot goalies can make big-time differences in series. And in Game 1, that certainly was the case, obviously, with Bobrovsky. But this was a Florida Panthers team that didn't have a ton of activity, 18 shots in the entire game. But you get Verhaeghe and you get Rodriguez to get a couple goals there to give them the advantage. And, then you get the empty netter, of course, at the end of the game. And you get the Florida Panthers being able to keep the Oilers off the board despite having all that firepower. It's got to be a tad distressing, to say the least, if you're the Edmonton Oilers and you're the fans there north of the border looking to be the first team since 1993 and the Montreal Canadiens to bring a Stanley Cup north of the border. So it was impressive to see what the Panthers were able to do, even though they didn't have necessarily an explosive offensive game. But though Edmonton Oilers, you have to figure some things out, right? You're going to have to break that glass ceiling, so to speak, when it comes to Bobrovsky between the pipes there, right, Tommy? And find a way to light the lamp, or else it could be a much shorter series than a lot of us expected here.
Yeah, look, I looked at the Panthers and I said, they went through Vasilevsky and Igor to get to the championship. Yeah. I mean, you know, wow, just wow. Going up against seemingly any other goaltender in the league, they got to be smiling and thinking, all right, well, we don't have to deal with these two anymore. And look, I watched every second of the playoffs, and you watch the shots that they got off of Vasilevsky and Igor, and you're going, man, the only two guys in the league that might be able to stop them are those two players. And they did. Igor stood on his head just miraculously and still lost the game. The offense was always kind of the question. And I wanted to see, you know, how are they going to be able to attack this? You know, how are they going to be able to sort of attack Edmonton, who has gone to a more defensive mindset? Here's the thing with Edmonton. And I said this 3 years ago, said this 2 years ago, and I'm saying this now. There comes a point in sports, Chris, where your game plan looks good, where everything is together. And you wrap it up, you throw it in the garbage, and you just tell your best player to take over. We've watched it happen in many situations. You've watched it happen in every other sport at certain times. A couple of years ago against the Kings, you watched the Edmonton Oilers just say that to Connor McDavid. And they talked about it afterwards. Throw everything out. McDavid was just simply not going to let them lose. And McDavid said, forget about all of the drawing up plays and the philosophy. I'm just taking this game over. Took the game over, took the series over, won the game and the series. I watched that. I watched what he did. When do you think it becomes that situation for Edmonton? Do they have to go down 0-2? Or is it a potential at this point where they're saying, look, we're going up against a dynamic team, a dynamic goalie. It's just time for you to take over. And you throw away the game plan of play defense, limit shots, all the things that they've been working on, and just say, McDavid, just go out there and win this for us. Because what I watched in Game 1 is just not going to work. It's just flat out not going to work. You can tell me that the game plan, oh, you got to keep with the game plan. Not in this spot. It's not going to work against Florida. There might be a spot here in the series, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's game two where they just tell McDavid, just go crazy. Take 5-6 shots. Go create your own space, and it might be game two. Chris, do you think it's game two, or do they stay with the philosophy that they've been kind of rolling with all year?
Yeah, Tom, you ask an interesting question because, for me, it's not really a perspective of which game. It's going to be absolutely early in game two, right? You're going to have to establish some offensive proficiency if you're the Edmonton Oilers. And it might not necessarily be Leon Draisaitl. It might not be McDavid. But it's going to have to be Hyman, right? It's going to have to be Nugent Hopkins. It's going to have to be Evander Kane. It's going to have to be Henrique. It's going to have to be one of these guys, maybe a defenseman like Darnell Nurse or, you know, or Bouchard or Ekholm or one of these guys, right, is going to have to kind of get things rolling for the Edmonton Oilers in this game, and you're going to have to find a way to solve Sergei Bobrovsky. I'm telling you, as someone who's not only a fan but has covered the NHL for a long time, from a fan standpoint, I've seen it up close of my Detroit Red Wings losing series because a goaltender is just, you know, is absolutely positively on fire. And there's no, you haven't been able to figure him out. And you guys, and you might be the better hockey club. You might be the better team. And you still don't find a way to get over the hump and to win the series. I think in game two, early in game two, Tom Barton, the Edmonton Oilers have to somehow grab a lead. They got to get that 1-0, 2-0 lead in this game. Because if it's another situation where the Florida Panthers, they go out there and they have, what, 22 shots maybe in game two, and they win the game 3-1, and it's kind of the same narrative that we saw after game one, right? And they're going to Edmonton with that mindset for both of these teams, it could be curtains for the Edmonton Oilers. Now, look, we get it. It's the NHL. Teams, you know, you see more scenarios present themselves where, you know, the home team wins the first two games and you go on the road and the home team wins two games and then all of a sudden it's a seven-game series and then, you know, and then all bets are off, right? That could absolutely be something that transpires here. But the, you know, but for me, the feather in the cap right now for the Florida Panthers is that guy between the pipes. It's Bob between the pipes. They got all kinds of confidence because they know they have him back there. And, yeah, they don't have necessarily the huge name guys and the offensive firepower guys that Edmonton has. But they're a heck of a hockey club. They showed it last year going to the Stanley Cup Finals and losing to the Vegas Golden Knights. They've been there before. You know that whole moniker, they've been there before. That's the case with the Florida Panthers. They have. Edmonton has it. This is the first time that you know, the likes of you know, Kane and Hyman and, you know, Draisaitl and obviously Connor McDavid have been in a Stanley Cup final. So those things come into play as well too. But make no mistake about it, Tommy, and I don't know if you agree or not, it's got to be early in game two. These Edmonton Oilers have to find a way to get that lamp lit and to get some early momentum going into this and to kind of change the trajectory of this series.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also is, you know, the Rocky Balboa against Drago mentality, kind of. The Edmonton Oilers rely upon fear.
Yeah.
Fear about what McDavid could do in the open ice. Fear about what Draisaitl and McDavid could do to you. Fear. And that fear is just squashed after game one. They're going, fear.
He's not a machine, Tommy Barton. He's a man.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the fear is gone.
Yeah.
And you got to put the fear back. I'm telling you now, if I'm the game plan, I'm telling Draisaitl and McDavid, I don't care what the score is. Get out of the first period with each one of you guys taking two or three shots on goal.
Yeah.
I want five shots on goal between the two of you. Pepper him with shots. Even if they're not good shots, pepper him with shots. We can't have a situation where they're shutting you two down. And you mentioned everybody else. I get it. Look, everybody needs to be involved. And Chris, I understand where you're coming from, and I agree with it. But at this point, because of the way Florida's playing, because of the way Bobrovsky's playing, I think it's got to be those two. Just step up. Show them what you can be. Show them that we're coming at you full force and make them adjust. Because right now, they're playing Florida's game. And you play Florida's game, you said it, early exit, yeah. That sounds about right if they continue to play Florida's game.
Storming towards the top of the hour here, Tommy. What do you think about that after game two, obviously, is going to be in Florida. What do you think that atmosphere is going to be like up there in Edmonton, Alberta? I've had the pleasure of actually being in that town before. Not a whole lot going on up there, but I can imagine a Stanley Cup final up there for the first time in a long time is probably going to be pretty rowdy, Mr. Barton.
Nervous, fun. If they're down 0-2, more nerves than fun. If they're 1-1, that place is going to be electric. It would be one of the best stadium atmospheres we've ever heard. If they are 1-1, if they're down 0-2, you're going to start to see a lot of tight, cold places up there.
Yeah.
In Edmonton. Yeah, it's going to be very nerve-wracking for them down 0-2. You know, even if it's a nothing-nothing game after the first period, I mean, you're going to see people, oh no, kind of, because that's the mentality that they have. When you lose as often as they did and you can't kind of cross the finish line as often as they have, you start to get that mentality.
First time in history.
Let's take that top.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, first time in history that the Florida Panthers have a lead in a Stanley Cup final, Tommy. And, of course, they are looking to capture their first ever Stanley Cup final as well, a Stanley Cup period, if they're able to win this series, and they've got three more wins to do it.
Yeah, Panthers have been around for 30-plus years, have not been able to do it, and got very close multiple times. All right, let's take a quick timeout. Top of the hour, we'll come on back. Hour number two, I have some football to ask you about. The schedules are out. I saw a couple of interesting games right off. Yeah, we're talking football. And Major League Baseball, the best player in baseball, hands down. There's no argument left. His team wins tonight. That's Aaron Judge. I want to argue with Chris that he is by far the best player in baseball. Is there even a second best player in baseball?
All rise!
I don't know. We'll talk about that, get into some baseball on hour number two, right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
All right, guys. Hour number two, Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com here. Sitting here with Chris Wynn. Hour number one in the books, we're talking NBA Finals. We were talking a little NHL Finals. But, Chris, it's any time of year, and it is the middle of, coming up to the middle of June here, and I'm talking the NFL. Because I want to get your take here. Look, the NFL schedule came out, and the immediate reaction from people right away was, okay, what are going to be the great games? You know, and you have games like, all right, Kirk Cousins is going to take on the Vikings. Oh, that's cool. You have the Harbaugh brothers in week 12 facing off against each other. That should be a pretty fun one. Aaron Rodgers against the Texans, maybe a changing of the guard. Oh, that could be kind of fun. Chiefs Niners week 7 makes a little bit of sense. You know, we have quite a few down the road. Chiefs Bills will be a classic. What jumped out at you besides just the highlight? Oh, cool, they're going to play the other team kind of games. Are there games that jumped out at you that might be under the radar people are overlooking? Is there a storyline as far as the schedule that jumped out at you? I know a couple of teams have some quirks and things of that nature. When you opened up the schedule, what did you see?
Yeah, I saw some quality matchups across the board. The first thing I think of when initiating a discussion like this, Tommy, right, is the old, you know, we go back to as sports radio hosts, right, and people in the media, and even people that are just at your local watering hole talking about the schedule release, it's kind of pointless, right? Like, it doesn't really matter. Some people want to play the schedule game as far as, like, trying to, you know, lay out what everybody's record's going to be and who's going to get W's and who's going to get losses in these certain situations. And then some of the points that you brought up, right, where you're getting the Harbaugh brothers getting a chance to face each other. I mean, the first thing really that came to my mind was the matchup on Thursday night, the opener on Thursday night, which could absolutely positively, Tommy, be a preview of the AFC Championship game with the Ravens taking out the Chiefs in that matchup on Thursday night. You know, obviously, everybody, all the listeners out there know that, you know, you're a Chicago Bears fan. They know I'm a Detroit Lions fan. So seeing that we're playing the Rams in Detroit week one, and Matthew Stafford has not come back to Detroit during the regular season to play a game. He played, obviously, in a playoff game. And in playoff games, they're not going to be playing any tribute videos to anybody at all or any of that kind of stuff. That pomp and circumstance is not going to go off. So I'll be curious to see what the Lions do for Matthew Stafford in his first return back to Detroit in a regular season game. They probably will do have some sort of tribute for him. But yeah, I mean, it's all based on what team you're a fan of. when it comes to all of that and what games are being played on Monday night, right, Tommy? And occasionally Sunday night games. That's what really NFL fans, we get juiced up about, is seeing those matchups. But, you know, as far as like making any predictions or any, you know, or opining any more on it, it's not really something that we really do. But yeah, I mean, it's, look, the bottom line is this. You said it at the top of this, at the top of this hour. It's the NFL. We're talking about in June, my friend, so we know how important it is, and it's a big deal, and we care. And, you know, even if it is, you know, June 9th here in around, you know, in the United States or around the world, we still find things to talk about when it comes to all things pigskin and the NFL, and that's absolutely been the case over this weekend and even today with respect to some of the breaking news that's gone on around the NFL.
Chris, here are a couple of things that jumped out at me, and two of them involve our teams. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to yours first. I know you're a fantasy guy. I'm a fantasy guy. I don't think Jared Goff is necessarily a name that jumps off the table, but do you see his schedule? Do you see the Lions' schedule?
Oh, yeah.
Until week 15, they play one game outdoors. 13 of 14 games will be indoors. The only outdoor game comes against the
Tampa
Packers.
Bay.
I mean, the Lions will be playing in a favorable environment. Chris, as a Lions fan, you got to be ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty pumped about that. Yeah, actually, not Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is playing in Detroit, so that's one of those games. And yeah, Arizona is indoors. Seahawks at Detroit, indoors. Lions in Dallas against the Cowboys, indoors. At Minnesota, oh yeah, by the way, that game's indoors. At home against Tennessee, and of course, you mentioned the Green Bay game on November 3rd is the first time the Lions will be outside in a stadium, especially with an offense like they have. You have both returning running backs coming back. You have a wide receiver with an axe to grind, looking to kind of, you know, break out of his shell in Jameson Williams, and an offense that absolutely is more proficient when they are dealing with, you know, very nice seasonal circumstances, is the way I'll put it. So it's definitely a benefit for Detroit when it comes to that aspect, Tommy. Now, what's up with the Bears? Now, what's your take when it comes to And a nice fun fact tidbit when it comes to your Chicago Bears and what they're facing as far as the 2024 schedule?
Well, I don't want to say that it's necessarily a bad thing for the Bears. By the way, it's also happening to the Steelers, but they're both setting a record. They won't play a divisional opponent until week 11. The Bears and the Steelers will not play a divisional game until week 11. I mean, that is it's just weird. Look, for the Bears, I think it's probably good because they get a chance with a new offense, with a new quarterback, to kind of get into the flow before maybe they're hitting their stride. Same thing with the Steelers, a lot of new moving parts. The Bears, their division outside of the Lions is not scary. So I think for the Bears, it's okay. It works out. It's just weird and quirky. But for the Steelers, my goodness, if you're not playing a division game until week 11, think about week 11 on. You have to play the Ravens twice, the Browns twice, and the Bengals twice. You got to play those teams. If you look at the Steelers' schedule, my goodness, this year, I think a lot of people are going to be buying on the Steelers for a while, and then all of a sudden it's going to kind of come crashing down is what they have. Here's the Steelers' schedule after week 11. Baltimore, at Cleveland, at Cincinnati, home against Cleveland, at Philly, at Baltimore, Kansas City, Cincinnati. There is a chance that the Steelers are a very good team on November 16th, and then they don't win another game the rest of the year. So for the Bears, I think it's quirky, might actually benefit for them. For the Steelers, it is a murderous row, just kind of schedule. Baltimore, at Cleveland, at Cincinnati, Cleveland, at home, at Philly, at Baltimore, Kansas City, Cincinnati to finish it off. My goodness.
And speaking of that run that you talked about with the Bears and their schedule, this is interesting and also quirky too, Tommy. You talked about that after that Patriots game, right, where they play their first division game against the Packers in Chicago. They play the next, I believe, five or six games against all either NFC opponents, NFC North opponents, obviously the Bears, the Vikings twice, and then, of course, the 49ers mixed in there as well too. So, and then they play the Lions again after that Vikings game. In the middle of December. So a pretty testy stretch, let's put it that way, for your Chicago Bears and Caleb Williams and company in that portion of the schedule, no doubt. And I think, did we lose Tommy? You might have lost him. But yeah, the NFL schedule gets wild, though, Angel. It does, because you got matchups. And by the way, it's kind of an interesting thing when we get Tommy back on the air. I'll ask him about this, because obviously we see the matchup between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers that's going to be in Brazil, right? And there's been discussion, of course, regarding apparently they have some violence down there, gang violence down there, and the color green is a prominent color worn by the gangs down there, and so apparently that's an issue that has come to pass when it comes to the NFL. So we'll see exactly how that all shakes out and whether or not the Green Bay Packers will be sporting those just god-awful all-yellow uniforms that they wear sometimes on Thanksgiving Day. And then, of course, the Eagles probably would wear what? They'd probably wear their all-black alternate uniforms that they wear for Philadelphia on occasion if they're not able to wear green in those situations. So there's no question that this is a deal where they're going to have to figure out exactly what they're going to do as far as the color schemes there and that situation. I don't anticipate that they would cancel the game, and I'm kind of shocked that the NFL didn't already kind of know about these circumstances presenting themselves in the first place, but we'll see how it works out. But, hey, it's all going to be a lot of fun starting on Thursday. You get the matchup, of the Baltimore Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs, obviously, Super Bowl champions. And they have some losses. They've had some additions. It's a team that is still going to be formidable. They are in the AFC West, and we're here in Vegas, of course, with the Raiders. And an interesting note as well, too, when it came to some of the breaking news over the last couple of days, former Las Vegas Raider, now current New York Giant, Darren Waller, has decided to retire at the age of 31. And I think we have Tommy back now. As we were talking about,
I cut. Gone.
No, it's all good. It was a smooth cut. It wasn't like a choppy cutaway. It just I went on one of my rants and then you were gone. But now we got you back. But we were talking about the schedule, right, and breaking it down as far as each team, how they the deal, right, Tommy, with the whole schedule rollout with today's day and age. You got all the memes, you got all the the funny quick videos at the top of it where everybody kind of gets amped up, and then we all take a look at the calendar, Tom Barton, and we realize it's May and we're talking about the schedule, right? And we have no idea, really. It's actually really what before the draft. So, just after the draft. So, it's not like we have, a complete idea about what each of our NFL teams has to bring to the table when it comes to the 2024-25 season. But you know how it works, right, Tommy? It doesn't matter. It's like going into spring training if you're a Major League Baseball fan. Hey, my team may be one of the worst in baseball, but it doesn't matter because we're still 0-0 going into spring training. It's kind of the same way it rolls out when that NFL schedule comes to pass.
Chris, are you ready this year to have Aaron Rodgers shoved down your throat like never before?
Okay, because so Aaron I gotta get your take on this. And you kind of alluded to it in the first hour because you brought up the whole comparison, right, of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady's career. I don't know if you saw this week, Tommy, all right? But it got bounced around a little bit on Twitter/X. It got bounced around a little bit with the national media and on some talk shows. Comparisons of what if you could have had Aaron Rodgers' career and Eli Manning's career. And the first thing I thought of, Heatwave Sports and Angel and Tim, if you're listening, and all of you out there, Jorge, all you guys that are listening, first thing I thought of was Tom Barton because of your eternal love for all things Aaron Rodgers. So I ask you the question, Mr. Barton, whose career would you rather have? Is it Eli Manning or is it Aaron Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers, now New York Jets?
I'm going to answer your question with a question.
Yes.
I know you played sports, whether it be in high school or college. Or whatnot. Yep. I'm sure a lot of people out there have played, okay?
Yep.
When you play sports, when you start from a little kid all the way growing up, especially team sports, what is your objective? Is it to get a lot of yards, get a lot of touchdowns, or is it to win a trophy?
The main objective, the most important objective, is to win a championship. It should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if you're the quarterback and all things are judged for you with wins and losses, it's even more important. Eli did it twice. Aaron Rodgers failed time after time after time after time. Eli Manning would not trade his career for Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers very well might trade his career for Eli Manning's. I don't think that Eli Manning is a better quarterback. I don't think Eli Manning had a better career. But would Eli Manning trade his career for Aaron Rodgers? No, he would not. Eli Manning has two championships. He got to the Hill twice. He did something historic that when you talk about the story of football, this is when people say Eli shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. And I go, of course he should. You can't tell the story of football without saying Eli stopped the undefeated Patriots. It is an iconic thing. And he did it twice. He beat Brady twice. Aaron Rodgers is going to go down in history as a very good quarterback. Very good quarterback. But he had more failures than successes. He failed a lot when he should have won. He failed a lot at home when he should have won. And yeah, I think there's no chance Eli trades his career for Aaron Rodgers in a dark retreat somewhere. You know, with a couple of psychedelics in you, Aaron Rodgers might say, you know what? I would trade my career for Eli's.
Okay, I can absolutely see where you're coming from here. You came strong. I like it. I appreciate it. And I think it's an absolutely positively solid take. But I'm going to, you know, of course, it's sports talk radio, right, Tommy? So I got to go the other way, man. And look, it's a little bit of piggybacking off of a couple other actual former NFL players who made comments about this. And obviously, right, folks, if you're just going to talk about the number of Super Bowl victories, right, Eli's got them. He has them by one touchdown, or excuse me, by one Super Bowl. That's an obvious, we understand that. We get that. But if you want to throw every other aspect, and you asked me the question, you said, you know, what's the most important thing? And I pointed out correctly, the most important thing should be, it's not for everybody, obviously, a lot of people, you know, care more about making money and other stuff and being famous and all that kind of stuff. But it should be about winning rings, right? Winning championships. It should be that. But when you're talking about comparing quarterbacks and their careers, the other stuff has to come into play. What am I talking about? Talking about accolades, right? MVPs. Are you in the discussion every year to be the MVP? Or are you hardly ever in the discussion to be an MVP? One of those quarterbacks was an Aaron Rodgers, and everybody knows, I hate saying this because I'm a Lions fan, all right? But Aaron Rodgers was in the discussion for multiple MVPs. I think he won one, didn't he? He might have won one. I'm kind of going off, flying by the seat of my pants here. Eli Manning, never really an MVP candidate, never really that kind of quarterback. He's kind of the moniker for the guy that was, a game manager, probably better than a game manager, but you understand the kind of direction I'm going here. That's kind of how he's viewed as a quarterback. He was never really viewed as a guy who was a top five guy in the NFL, really, at any point. So when it came to team, but he won two Super Bowls. And by the way, he beat the Patriots, in said Super Bowl. So that's going to carry a ton of weight. But when it comes to accolades, again, I get back to, MVPs, records, proficiency, better quarterback play. And then you get off the field, you talk about endorsements, and you talk about visibility and, that whole moniker of just being more of a public spectacle, if you want to use that word. That's not really a great word to use. But, again, I think you kind of get the idea of what I'm talking about here. It's Aaron Rodgers over Eli Manning all day long. So Again, and I'm in the camp, Tommy, as you are, when it comes to, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I find it painstakingly difficult. It's like putting, you know, nails on a chalkboard, waxing poetic about anything Aaron Rodgers at all. But I think for the sake of this discussion, comparing these two guys, and now we can kind of circle into what you led with here, we are going into a 2024 season. After kind of a wild way it ended last year for Aaron Rodgers, where the guy, you know, is on the field for 5 seconds and his season's over, now he's, you know, transitioning into his second season with the Jets, and now there's expectations, and you are right there in that backyard. So I guess I want you to lead the discussion on this. What are we looking at when it comes to all things New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers as we enter this season?
They're going to be shoved down our throat. That's for sure. They have seven games on national TV, six in prime time before Thanksgiving. We are going to get all the Aaron Rodgers we can handle. But I will say this. Through every team that he ever had in Green Bay, I always said there was something missing. Through everything, great team, including the Super Bowl team, I always found flaws in the team. I think the New York Jets are absolutely dynamic this year. Now, I will say this. They have quarterbacks. They have wide receivers. They have running backs. They have a refixed offensive line. Their defense is absolutely on point, maybe the best in the league. I do think their head coach is a numbskull. I don't have any confidence in him. But the Jets, if Aaron Rodgers can stay upright, This Jets team is going to open up some eyes. And this is not a New York fan. I do not like the Jets. I live in a Dolphins household, okay? I've never rooted for the Jets in my life, and I hate Aaron Rodgers. But, man, you start breaking down what has happened in the AFC. The Dolphins lost their entire defense. The Bills lost almost everybody outside of Josh Allen. The Patriots lost Bill Belichick. The Browns can't be counted on. The Bengals are still dealing with injuries. The Steelers, I just told you about their schedule. Not sure if the Texans are old enough yet. Jacksonville took a step back. It's kind of Kansas City, Baltimore, and then who's the third best team in the AFC?
I got
one. Jets have a legitimate argument there.
I got one, and it's not in the AFC East, but I'll make a comment on this real quick because you're talking about this, and it's interesting. So your description of what the Jets are bringing to the table, I guess it does kind of inject some interest, right, into that division because of all the things you talked about as far as the Patriots and the Bills and the Dolphins. This is, I guess the NFL should be kind of happy, right? If you know that the Jets kind of are shaping up where this could be a return to prominence in that division for the Jets, given that what could act, you know, if you want to look at, you know, things through rose-colored glasses. And what, you know, the combination of all this personnel you just talked about with the Jets and a healthy Aaron Rodgers could bring to the table for New York. I guess it would be an injection, right, Tommy, when it comes to the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. And they're intriguing. I mean, they really are.
And the team I'm talking about, Tommy, and we can get into this if you want, talking about upstarts, talking about teams that we're expecting to maybe make a splash, throw a monkey wrench into the situation, any way you want to describe it, is a team down south, and that's the Houston Texans, all right, with C.J. Stroud. Obviously, the additions that the Texans have made, both on the offensive and defensive side of the football, in a division that's very winnable in the AFC South, that is a team that I'm looking at that absolutely, Mr. Barton, could be the third best team in the AFC this year. What you say?
I think a lot of people are on your trajectory. And I'll tell you what, everybody loves Stroud. Everybody loves the Diggs move. Pfft, that defense is fantastic. I can't disagree with you other than to say we've watched a lot of teams jump over, you know, out in front of their skis in year one, take a step back in year two. I think Anthony Richardson makes the Colts a little bit better. I think Jacksonville is a little bit better than what people are giving them credit for. It wouldn't surprise me if the Texans are building something for the future, that the Texans are a big-time threat. Maybe the Texans are the best team in the AFC. Maybe I go that far, Chris. But I got to see it one more time. You know, I need to see it one more time. They played a last place schedule. They played very well, but they played a last place schedule with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach. Now it's year two. Now people have film on the rookie head coach. Now people have film on the rookie quarterback. Now they have to play a first place schedule. Things are a little bit different. We've watched sophomore slumps. That's the only reason I'm not all over the Texans is because of a potential sophomore slump by their head coach, by their quarterback, by their defensive player. I mean, it's a very young team. We have watched at times that young team take a step backwards before leaps forward.
And you alluded to this also, of course, the situation in Los Angeles with the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh now takes over as the head coach there, maybe shaking things a little bit up there when it comes to the AFC West. Look, we understand the Kansas City Chiefs are right now the gold standard in that division. Denver, of course, is kind of a team that's in limbo, and we'll see how that all shakes out with them. But what do you think about this Chargers team? Because, look, it's a team that was, what, 5-12 a year ago. One of the more disappointing teams in football, quite frankly, with that team finishing in the cellar of that division. But do you see kind of a rebound situation here with the Chargers and what they're able to do with having, you know, a young franchise quarterback there, obviously, in Justin Herbert, and a team that maybe some addition by subtraction might help out with some of the key players on that team?
I mean, they're still really talented, Chris, right? I mean, yeah. Justin Herbert's talented. They brought in some talented running backs. The offensive line will be good. Harbaugh's a good coach. Derwin James might be the best safety in the league. They still have pass rushers on that team in Bosa and Mack. Yeah, they're a talented team, but it is a complete change in philosophy. I can't tell you that the Chargers are going to overtake Kansas City, but should they be in the mix for a wild card? Yeah, I think they'll be right there. I don't think it's their year, though. Not yet. You give Harbaugh 2 years to work, maybe I'll have a different outcome. Right now, I think the Chargers' main goals are get back to relevancy, fight for a wild card, try to start buying into what Harbaugh's doing there. But I think they're very far behind the big group. They're not a shoo-in for the playoffs. They're in the conversation for wild card. I would put them, Chargers, Jacksonville, Miami, they're all kind of in that mix where maybe even the Colts where, yeah, you know what? They got a couple of wrinkles to work out, but they're going to be fighting for the same position.
And you talked about it, the big boys in the AFC, the likes of the Chiefs and, of course, the Baltimore Ravens. But that division with Baltimore, of course, 13-4 a year ago atop that division. I think that Tim Oglesby's team has a ton of promise going into this 2024-25 season. But there's also a couple interesting teams, obviously, in that division when you're talking about quarterbacks that are looking to bounce back, right? Obviously, I'm talking about Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. And, of course, I'm talking about Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. Pittsburgh's a situation, again, that's up in the air. Obviously, when you bring in a quarterback, you know, the likes of Russell Wilson, and you make the trade for, you know, a guy who I still think has franchise quarterback potential in Justin Fields. It makes it very interesting, doesn't it, Tommy, when it comes to that AFC North and what's all going to shake out with the exception of Tim Uglesby's Baltimore Ravens?
Yeah, the Ravens are the most talented team, and I think it really comes down to, you know, what do you believe with the quarterbacks? And it's a belief system. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Do you believe Deshaun Watson, who hasn't done a thing in years, I mean years, do you think he bounces back to what he was early on in his career? No. Russell Wilson, do you believe he bounces back to his Seattle days pre-Pete Carroll getting sick of him? No. Joe Burrow, do you believe that Joe Burrow stays healthy and can just kind of seamlessly, you know, hit the ground running? I don't know if I buy into that either. So to me, you're right. It's Baltimore and everybody else there.
And of course, as we round down to the bottom of the hour here, this is definitely going to be a lot of fun to watch, Tommy. I'm telling you, a lot of fun to see what happens in this AFC South. I mean, look, I mentioned, we just talked about how the Houston Texans, and you kind of touched on the Jags, right, and the Colts. But, you know, there's been some personnel shakeup, to say the least, in this division. And I think it could make for a very interesting next, you know, 5, 6, 7 months when it comes to that division.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait to watch Stroud. He will be absolutely electric, and that's going to be fun. But yeah, get ready for Aaron Rodgers to be shoved down your throat. I can't believe how many primetime games we have to watch with this guy.
We can kind of believe it, though, right? I mean, it's a New York team. I mean, it's the Jets, you know? It's Adam Sandler's boys. It's the team. It's New York. That's how we roll in America, baby. Big markets get love. That's what happens. Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, right around New York, New Jersey, you know? That's how we operate in the United States of America, baby. You gotta love it.
Well, you just mentioned New York. When we come back from this quick break here, we're going to get into the decision's done. I mean, the argument's over. Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball. He is by far better than Ohtani. He's been better than Ohtani ever since Ohtani entered the league. And now finally people are starting to realize it. I want to get your take on how Aaron Judge has kind of put an exclamation point on this quote-unquote argument, how the Yankees and Dodgers are looking. You called it in the beginning of the show, maybe a World Series preview. We'll get into all that and a little bit of Major League Baseball right after this break, right here on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tom Barton.
Alright guys, welcome back to Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com here. Along with Chris Wynn. Hit us up over on the X Christian Wynn and at Tom Barton Sports. Well guys, I've been teasing it all show. And look, there is no more argument. And there shouldn't have ever been an argument. There should not have been an argument for years. Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball. Shohei Ohtani is a distant second. The end. The allure of Ohtani was, well, you know what? He pitches and he hits and he does. That would be to say, and I've made this argument before, that, well, that other players don't play the field. And how much credit do you give to a guy who's playing the field? Well, Aaron Judge plays center field, guys. Plays right field and center field. Center field, you could argue, is the most important position defensively outside of catcher. It's either catcher, shortstop, and center. Those are the top three. His contributions over 162 games is way more important than Shohei Ohtani pitching 30 times. But this year, he's not even pitching. Ohtani's not even pitching this year. He's a DH. So half of his game is immediately removed. Any of the people that are arguing that Shohei Ohtani's the best player on the planet, guys, your argument was, well, because he pitches. Now he doesn't pitch. His numbers are far behind Aaron Judge. They've generally been behind him for his career. There should be no doubt anymore that Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball. Aaron Judge is doing historic things out here, guys. In a year last year, where he only had 458 at-bats, Aaron Judge missed 50-something games, 55 games or so. He missed 55 games. He still hit 37 home runs. I mean, this is what he did. 2 years ago, 62, 131, we get it. This year, he's on pace for 58 home runs. On pace for 58 home runs to go along with a 300 average. Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball. The New York Yankees right now are the best team in baseball. And what's scary about the Yankees-Dodgers rivalry, and I'm calling it loosely saying a rivalry, is that both teams are likely to get back, potentially, their number one starter. I mean, with the Yankees' case, they're getting back the Cy Young and Gerrit Cole's coming on. And in the Dodgers' case, Clayton Kershaw will join this team. Two Hall of Famers are going to join these teams who are already just simply dynamic. Chris, for me, it's an open and shut case. The Yankees are the best team in baseball, and getting, especially once Cole gets back. Aaron Judge is clearly the best player in baseball. I don't think it's an argument anymore. And while the Dodgers are kind of steamrolling their way and rolling over the West, the Yankees are looking at things and going, I'm not that worried about anybody from the West or the Central. Kind of their only competition is the Orioles, who they're in front of. With the Dodgers, they eventually have to go up against Philly, who looks like a formidable opponent. Give me your take on the Yankees and Dodgers.
Yeah, a lot of fun to get a chance to kind of catch this matchup today as someone who thinks that these are the two best teams in baseball and probably should be facing off in the Fall Classic coming. But to speak to your comments regarding the Yankees, look, I mean, Aaron Judge, to say that there should have never been a discussion, I don't know about that, Tommy. I mean, look, absolutely, positively was a reason why there was discussions because Shohei Ohtani not only was putting up huge stats when it came to offensively, but he was also a solid pitcher as well too. And having that combination of those two was the reason why we were discussing him, if you want to talk about in that context, as the best player in baseball. Now, I agree with you. I clearly think that at this point, going through the 2024 season, that it's clear that Aaron Judge has outdistanced him and is now the best player in baseball. But make no mistake, Shohei Ohtani, and for reasons that you pointed out, that Ohtani is not a pitcher anymore, and his stats are nowhere near offensively what Judge brings to the table. So I completely get that. What's intriguing to me about the Yankees is that, obviously Juan Soto dealing with the injury, right? He missed his third game due to that forearm soreness. So what do? They plug Grisham in there, and all he does is take a Tyler Glasnow fastball and, put it about, a dozen rows in the right field seats to give them the lead in the game today. My point being is that the Yankees, not only do they have a top-tier lineup across the board, but they also have guys that they can plug in to do damage as well, too. You get also the home run from Oswaldo Cabrera in this game as well, too, to help them get this victory. And then, Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge. He is the guy. He is the man. It's far. It's deep. It's gone. He is a superstar. And you got to have those kind of guys. Now, look, the Dodgers have those kind of guys, too. And that's why it's going to be a lot of fun if these two teams match up when it comes to the playoffs and in the World Series, because they're absolutely formidable. You've got the Dodgers sitting, at 41-26 on the season, the Yankees at 46-21. I'll be curious to see exactly what what happens with the Yankees when it comes to their pitching staff and Aaron Boone, how he kind of handles this entire situation. But it was kind of funny, too, also to see that sellout crowd there at Yankee Stadium of over 48,000 people with the chant, Tommy, of "We want Soto" when Grisham came to the plate after Verdugo had that infield hit as well, too. And then Aaron Judge hit that Judge had that bounce off the fielder's glove. That was pretty hilarious, too. And shout out to one of our faithful listeners and friend of the show, Scott Engels, down in Orlando, Florida. He tweets in to me. That the home run by Aaron Judge, he hit that thing so far, Tommy, that the cameras could not even keep up. That's how far that shot went in this game. So a lot of cool aspects if you're a baseball fan to get out of this matchup between Los Angeles and New York in this game and, of course, in this series over the weekend, and I'm sure there's much more to come.
Chris, I'm going to ask you this probably again in like November.
Yep.
But I'll ask it now. I want you to pause before you answer, because I know what your immediate answer is going to be, but is Aaron Judge a Hall of Famer right now?
Wow. I think he is. And for the simple fact that over the past, 2, 3, 4 years, there's been a lot of guys that have gotten into the Hall of Fame that a lot of us are kind of shaking our head and scratching our head and saying, is he really a Hall of Famer? Or is he a guy that's kind of should be on, the precipice of the Hall of Fame and maybe on the outside looking in when it comes to Cooperstown? I think, if you look at it from that standpoint, Tommy, right? If you look at it from that perspective, absolutely. I think he's a Hall of Famer right now. And, of course, some of the guys I'm talking about happen to be my beloved Detroit Tigers. I'm talking about guys like Lou Whitaker. I'm talking about guys like, Alan Trammell, right? That I think that were great players in their day, but they were never, and we get to talk about this all the time, right, when it comes to Hall of Fame, Tommy, that usually a Hall of Famer, he's got to be one of the best, one of the top two players at his position at some point near his career. You got to get that feeling about him. And some of the guys that have gotten into the Hall of Fame, again, over the past 4 or 5 years, we just don't feel that way about them. So to answer your question, I say yes, I think he is, because we absolutely have that view of Aaron Judge when it comes to greatness, right, and where he stands among his peers in baseball. And so I think that is the rationale why I think he is a Hall of Famer right now.
Yeah, look, for my Hall of Fame is always very different. I would rather put in a guy who dominates the sport for a decade, even 5, 6, 7 years, and he's the clear best player in the sport, than a guy that kind of hangs on. And the guy, I hate to throw him under the bus, but the guy that I keep bringing up is Harold Baines.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge is a far superior ball player than Harold Baines ever was. I mean, ever was. And I don't think it's too early. Look, Aaron Judge has 900 games played. He probably, for the committee, has to put on another 3-4 years. But if he was to retire today, Chris, I think we're having the conversation. You know, I mean, he's got a 62 home run season, a 52 home run season, a couple of seasons where he led the league in walks, a couple of seasons where he led the league in RBIs. What he's doing this year kind of puts a cherry on top of all of that. I mean, you think about it like this, Chris. He's got 66 games this year. If he didn't take another at-bat this year, think about it from a fantasy perspective, guys. If he didn't take another at-bat, he ends the year at 298 with 23 homers. It's a pretty decent season, right? I mean, you know, it's a good year. I think we are watching the absolute best in the sport. And I think that, yeah, for my Hall of Fame, dominance always wins out. I will take dominance over longevity every day of the week. Aaron Judge is a Hall of Famer.
And you think about it from that standpoint also of dominance in the sport. Another guy that comes to my mind, Tommy, and I don't know if you'll agree with my take on this or not, but a guy that's on the outside looking in and should be when it comes to the Hall of Fame, if you look at it from a lightning in a bottle view of like they were great for a short period of time, right? And so maybe they should be in the discussion, even though they're not in the Hall of Fame. Josh Hamilton, right? Guys like that, where they were, you know, for a short period. Well, in Josh Hamilton's case, it was a pretty short period of time. But they were dominant, right? And they were one of the best players in the league. Now, look, I'm not comparing Josh Hamilton to Aaron Judge. I'm just trying to make the point of a guy who's on that other side that's not going to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, but for a few years was great, you know.
And I have that guy for you.
Yeah.
Here you go, Chris. You'll remember him. Before I give you his name, I'm going to tell you what he did. Finished in the All-Star MVP voting 7th, 3rd, 2nd, 3rd in 4 consecutive years. Missed one, still went to the All-Star game, and then 8th. So he had 5 top 10 MVP finishes in a 6-year span. He hit 50 home runs 1 year, led the league in RBIs 3 years in a row. This guy will never get a sniff at the Hall of Fame. I'm talking about Albert Bell.
Wow.
You want to talk about a guy that is underrated? Home runs, 34, 38, 36, 50, 48, 30, 49, 37. Won't get a shot at the Hall of Fame. Batting average, .295, career batting average. He has everything. And when we talk about guys that explode onto the scene and just kind of just go away, his last year in baseball, Chris, 23 home runs, 103 RBIs, .281 average, and then never played again. Never played again with 23, 103, and 281. he's the head scratcher for me of what happened. You know, I mean, he had a span. They say he played 12 years, but the first 2 years he played 71 total games. So he had a 10-year span that was just about as good as anybody that I can remember. Ended on a note where he hit back-to-back seasons. At the end of his career, he hit back-to-back seasons of 37 and 23 home runs, 117 and 103, 297, 281, and somehow or another fizzled away. You're looking for a guy that, you know, dominated shortly and won't get a sniff at the Hall of Fame. Albert Bell's your guy.
Oh, no question about it. And you can even look, and I know we're talking about a lot of guys that were bombers, right? Guys that hit all kinds of home runs, but I'm thinking of guys like Tony Armas, right? I'm thinking of guys like Cecil Fielder. I'm talking, you know, guys that had, you know, historic when it came to home run type seasons and power type number seasons that it just wasn't long enough and didn't sustain the longevity. And that's juxtaposed to, you know, the reasons why a lot of these, and it's really the Veterans Committee, Tommy, I think that puts some of these kind of, I use the term borderline Hall of Famers in, right? And they put them in. Their reasoning for doing it is because they had longevity, right? It's because over a long period of time, they might have not have had those monster numbers like you were just describing, right, for Albert Bell or some of these other players, but they were consistent, right? And they are out there for 15, 20 years in some cases and putting up decent, solid numbers, and that was enough to give reasoning and rationale for the Veterans Committee to put some of these guys into the Hall of Fame that a lot of us people who, you know, may not be experts, we consider ourselves experts when it comes to baseball, are kind of shaking our head and saying, well, I don't necessarily know if that guy's a Hall of Famer or not, but he still ends up in Cooperstown anyway.
Well, I got another couple for you here. Ready? Since we're having this discussion. How about Prince Fielder? Rookie of the year, finished third in the MVP, 20th, yep. Then fourth, then third, then ninth. He got 141 RBIs. He had over 100 RBIs 6 of 7 years. Home runs, 50, 34, 46, 32, 38, 30. I mean, the guy, he was a monster. Finished with a .283 career batting average, over 300 home runs. That's a guy. And then you go to an even more lightning in a bottle. Guy wins Rookie of the Year first year. Next year, MVP. Next year, finishes fifth. Next year, second. Next year, third. And then top 10 2 years in a row. Every year of the guy's first 7 years of his career, he was a top 10 MVP, and he brought home one of the trophies. RBIs, 149, 136, 146, 141. This is like Lou Gehrig
numbers. Wow.
58 bombs, 47 bombs, 48 bombs, 45 bombs. Talking about Ryan Howard. I mean, here's a guy that, if you want to talk about a seven-year span, my goodness, Ryan Howard put up legitimate, like Lou Gehrig-type numbers when you talk about home runs and RBIs.
Well, it's no doubt. It's the Major League Baseball equivalent of the Gale Sayers effect, right, Tommy? I mean, that's what you're talking about here. And so, I mean, it's a situation where we understand and we are able to view greatness, but it's whether or not it's over a suitable extended period of time, I guess, is the way we'll look at it. You know, they're not in Brady Anderson territory, right? Where they have one season where they're unbelievable and then they just fall off. But they're not also in. You mentioned Lou Gehrig. I mean, Lou Gehrig. We're talking about longevity at its finest. I mean, it's just it's kind of trying to find that happy medium, and whether or not guys are worthy, right, of Cooperstown or not. And that's a great one, Prince Fielder, bringing that up. I don't have his numbers in front of me. I had to check that out, but he's probably somebody who is going to possibly be a candidate when it comes to the Veterans Committee later on down the line.
One last question before we go. Yep. I only got a couple of minutes. I made the case, and it's over. Aaron Judge is better than Ohtani.
Yep.
Shut the book.
Judge, it's over.
Series. Yeah,
Angel, it's over. Tommy says it's over.
RBIs or, yeah, Ohtani had a 154 average with a 1 RBI. Yep. Good series, Ohtani. So the question is now, is Ohtani even the best player on his own team? I don't think so. And I said this coming into the season. Chris, Mookie Betts is a better player than Shohei Ohtani.
I can get on board with that. I can pick up what you're putting down in that category. I could see it.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Might be splitting hairs a little bit here, but yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's close. I think Mookie Betts is, the fact that he plays shortstop, second base, and outfield, could win a Gold Glove at all three positions, just gives me that added bonus. I think Mookie Betts is a better player than Ohtani right now, this year. You know, Ohtani starts throwing again, a different discussion. This year, I'm taking Mookie Betts.
I can absolutely pick up what you're putting down here and see where this is going. As we get down to the back end of the show, Tommy, though, we got to talk about this, right? Fun little series over in jolly old England, my friend, as the Mets took on the Philadelphia Phillies. I like to call them the Vegas Phillies, Tommy, because, you know, two of their key players happen to be Vegas guys. But you see the Phillies sitting at 45-20 right now, the top of the National League East. First of all, your thoughts on Major League Baseball making the journey across the pond and this weekend series between the New York Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies.
The only thing good to come out of this miserable series was the shirt that said England blew a 13 colony lead. I mean, that was about it. This was weird in the middle of the season.
Yep.
It was idiotic to do it this time. Why did we pick these two? There's so many questions. I thought it was dumb. I didn't think it added anything to the season. It only added jet lag to the Phillies and Mets. If you want to do it before the year, you know, what, like they always have that series, that's okay. If you wanted to do it around the All-Star break, I would be fine with that, you know. But it was a weird timing, weird situation. There was almost no hype, no lead up to it. It fell very flat to me. And I mean, the games were okay, but yeah, I don't know. It was flat to me, Chris. It didn't do anything for me. How about you?
I was intrigued a little bit by it just because I'm now becoming, I got to say it, Tommy, I'm, and this isn't just some C-win hot take on a Sunday fun day Heatwave Sports. The Phillies are kind of becoming my National League team, brother. They kind of are. I mean, I just obviously the Vegas connection as well too. I just like kind of that dynamic of that fan base with that team there, and I'm getting sweet on the Phillies, Tommy, is what I'm saying. Basically, and of course, the Mets get the win today, 6-5. You know, snapping the Phillies. I think they had a 4-game winning streak going into that game. But they're going to be a fun. Tommy, this Phillies team is going to be fun to watch, right? When it comes to the National League playoffs and kind of you know, how things shake out across the board amongst all those divisions as we head towards September.
Listen, Chris, I picked them to go to the World Series. I mean, yeah. I have been on this team for a couple of years now. I'm a big Aaron Nola fan, and Nola and Wheeler 1-2 to me is as dynamic as you can get. My concern has always been, can Bryce Harper get another bat in there?
Yeah.
Alec Bohm looked like it early in the season. Trey Turner's on the injured list. That's kind of a problem. Look, I think that Philly is definitely the second best team. I'm just not sure I'm ready to put them over the Dodgers yet. But I will say this. Everything I read from Philly says they're going to make a move. And I think they almost have to. I don't believe that you can go into the season going up against the Dodgers with a back end of Jose Alvarado and relying upon him to close games. I like Hoffman, but I don't believe that. And I also think that they need, you know, another dynamic bat in the middle. Schwarber's nice, unreliable. Maybe getting Trey Turner back will fix it all. But I like the Phillies too. I agree with what you're saying there. They might be the team that upends what we just watched. We might not get a World Series of Dodgers-Yankees because maybe it's Philly that comes in and kind of swoops in and ruins the party for the Los Angeles and New York fans.
Phillies, all right, Chris, Phillies hop on a plane, Tommy. And Phillies hop on a plane real quick and head to Boston for a 3-game set in the middle of the week. So the season continues. Even after some games up in London.
I'm going to be interesting to follow how that jet lag helps them or hurts them.
Yeah.
See, am I going to start betting against teams coming back from England?
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's start doing the numbers there. All right, Chris, it's been a fun 2 hours. Everybody, make sure you check us out. Go check out Chris Wynn at Christian Wynn over on X. He'll be all over town on every radio station ever, basically. That's Chris's job. And go check me out at Tom Barton Sports, TomBartonSports.com as well. I've been on a heater lately, guys. I have given out the Celtics to win the series. I might be on an NHL play tomorrow, but I'm already on 2 baseball games tomorrow and a huge underdog. Go check me out. It's TomBartonSports.com, TomBartonSports.com. Have a very good week, everybody.